Language? Good gracious. It's not kids at all. It's two giant lucky bags walking into my shop.
We're not lucky bags, Mr. Fisk. These are just clever disguises my chum Molly and I have put on so that we can sneak into your shop, shoot you with our spud guns, and make off with our free copy of the Harpoon magazine.
Oh, no, not again. Go on then, you young whippersnappers. Get it over with.
Take that, you apron buffoon! Here you are, Molly. Grab the mag.
Oh, you little tyke.
I say, I just thought we spent £5 on these two giant lucky bag disguises and our two spud guns, and we could have bought the harpoon for sevenpence halfpenny.
Oh, yes. We're idiots, aren't we? Still, good laugh, wasn't it?
Last sea blow!
All aboard for this week's edition of the Harpoon. A magazine for young and old across the English-speaking world, with six color plates and numerous black and white illustrations. Price sevenpence halfpenny net and available throughout the empire. All rights reserved.
Who's been polishing the sun? Oh, hey, Pip. This is your old chum, the editor. Yeah, testing out the new deluxe imperial diving suit in Portsmouth Harbour. This is the very suit that Commander Wackford Office Kipper used in his pioneering exploration of the drains at Wentworth. Well, what a fecund fish pond of fun and footling we've got for you this week. Charterhouse Mix is back with the sequel to his thrilling article, Shaving for the Meek at Heart. Captain Bonnet is back, of course, with a selection of his favourite naval songs, beginning with I Married a Squid from Tonga Bay with a hoe and a hoe and a hey, hey, hey. Well, enjoy the issue, won't ya? I'm off to spear a whelk with me trident. Oh, dear. Maybe it wasn't a good idea to smoke a pipe with this diving helmet on. Can't see a ruddy thing. Help! Help!
Oh, dear. Learn to be a hairdresser by post. Enroll today and we will send you a tuft of hair each week, together with an accompanying diagram explaining what to do with it. Until you reach grade one level, when we will post you a complete customer. Enroll with us and very soon, you will be a person doing a hairdressing correspondence course.
Harpoon Natural History, the story of evolution, narrated by Sir Gideon Attenborough. Part 1, The Dawn of Creation.
Billions of years ago, the Earth is covered by a dark, bubbling, boiling chemical soup, which, had we been around to find out, might have tasted a little like tomato and cress, or perhaps even chicken. Who knows? Not I. This soup was full of molecules constantly banging into each other. Eventually, the molecules combined to form a big particle known as a big particle. Life has been created. Unfortunately, not having a body of any sort to inhabit, life dies.
Continued on page 12.
Words for sale. A wide range of nouns, verbs, adjectives, adverbs, pronouns, direct and indirect objects to suit all pockets. Free trial offer. All the words in this advertisement plus this delightful and useful preposition
on
Box H.
Harpoon How To. The Reverend A. Morris, author of How to Make Model Shrubs for Your Railway Set, How to Make Model Saplings for Your Railway Set, and How to Make Model Hedgerows for Your Railway Set, this week tells us how to make model trees for your railway set.
Good afternoon.
There are two ways you can acquire a model tree for your railway set. First, you can join a secret society of magicians who have access to ancient books of medieval spells, such as the Grimoire of Albertus Magnus, and shrink a real tree to the size you require. Or you can buy one from a shop. Good afternoon.
Baby at the door,
baby at the door,
baby on the floor,
baby on the floor,
in a little dream nest that I call home.
What are other people's houses like? An illustrated article by guest columnist F.F., author of What Are Other People's Noses Like?
Hello there. In other lands, they don't build houses the same way as we do, you know. Stone mean no. It's not because they don't want to. They blooming can't. The Red Indians make them out of twigs and buffalo hide and call them wigwams, which is short for wigwams are crap. In Central America, they make them out of unburnt brick and call them adobes. A better name for them would be a pile of useless bricks that a dog would shun. And in the Arctic, they make them out of ice and call them igloos, which is Eskimo for, well, what do you suggest I make it out of? But today, I've come to Belgravia in London to find out what other people's houses are like. Oh, here's one. Let's go in, shall we? Ooh, damn, the back door's locked. Hang on. Here we are. Just get the lock from the inside. And here we are. What a lovely house. The people of Belgravia live very comfortably, as one can see, from the expensive silver ornaments in this cabinet here. The gold carriage clock on the mantelpiece. And the lovely oil paintings adorning the walls. All originals, of course. Now, let's see what other people's jewel boxes are like upstairs, shall we? I tell you what, we'll leave the jewellery for now and see if we can find some interesting facts about this skylight.
There he is!
Ooh.
Got ya!
Take it easy, will ya?
I thought so, sir. It's Fingers Flotsam, the notorious housebreaker, Strength magazine columnist. We've been after you ever since that infamous Let's Go on a Tour of the Royal Mint article you wrote for Boyzone.
Well, boys and girls, let's go and see what other people's police cells are like, shall we? Oh, yeah. You want to see a picture of a wigwam costume?
Harpoon Romance, The Masked Man of Myrdleton.
By Thirsty Barrow, authoress of Kiss My Cleavage. Dorset, 1658, a county ravaged by civil war, when Cavalier rose up against Roundhead, when Son rose up against Father, and when Milkman rose up against the deferred payment of weekly milk bills. In these turbulent times, introductions to stories were done on old bits of scroll that moved slowly up as you read them, and lots of men rode around with masks on to make life that bit more interesting. One such man was the Masked Man of Myrdleton.
Father, how pretty are the woods this time of year. How glad I am to be back.
Silence, Emily. Can't you see I'm scowling?
But why so earnest, Father?
We the Cavendishes are the only family in Dorset who remain in allegiance to the king, which makes things pretty tricky.
Ah, and the masked horseman you've told me about, who's been roaming the countryside, isn't helping matters either.
You're telling me.
Stand and deliver.
Zooms. Talk of the devil, it's him.
Well, 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 it's Squire Cavendish, I believe, and his fair stepdaughter, Emily. The selfsame squire who cut his youngest son out of his will and banished him to France 10 years ago for dallying with a servant girl.
Yes, that's right, and I haven't seen him since.
Your jewels, Sarah, and your silver snuffbox, or my name isn't... Whoops, nearly told you.
How masterful he is, and yet how purple.
There you are, you scoundrel, now. Be gone.
I trust we'll meet again, pretty one.
Well, I...
Not you, Emily.
Oh.
Your arrogance is exceeded only by the length of your whip, sir.
All the better to tame you with, young girl. Until we meet again.
His voice For a moment, I thought...
Father?
Oh, nothing. Ride on, Gary.
Later that night in Cavendish Hall, Emily sat at her latticed window in a low-cut nightgown of purest white, brushing her long, dark locks that tumbled in black rivulets over her pale, smooth shoulders and her full, heaving...
Elizabeth.
Yes, milady?
Who do you think the masked horseman is?
Oh, clumsy. Sorry, milady. Milady, could I have the night off? I have to go and visit my cousin Francis, whose face was cruelly disfigured in a hunting accident with your father, and who hasn't been seen since.
Why, certainly, Elizabeth. But hark! Who crosses the courtyard so late and yet so early?
Oh, that's Garfield, the very bitter cobbler, milady. He was made unemployed by the town guild and now makes masks.
I wonder...
Next morning...
How sweet the briar, how fecund the foliage. Elizabeth, Are these spurs on your boots?
Yes, milady. I'm breaking them in for my half-brother Henry, who sells jewels and snuff boxes and little leather pouches with money in them in the village.
Interesting.
It's Mortlake, the haymaker struck woodcutter struck ploughman. He's fallen off his horse. A black leather thing has fallen off his face with two holes in it.
That's me spectacles, Mum. It's not a mask or anything. You see, I'm waiting to have some glass put in. I'm on my way to the optician's now.
Indeed. That night, Emily tossed and turned fitfully as images of leather whips and masks thronged her fevered consciousness. Who was the mysterious horseman? So far, no clue had come her way. And yet...
Oh, I can't sleep. The masked horseman preys on my mind, sir.
And so I should, young Emily.
Oh, you've shinned up the ivy.
All the better to clasp you to my body and kiss you, my dear.
Never. Oh, all right, then.
The night is ours, Emily. Let me carry you to your four-poster bed and let us lie together, fully clothed all night and... probably just kiss.
Bodkins, caught you in the nick of time, you lecherous swine.
Dead Zooks discovered.
Tear off his mask, Elizabeth. Let us know at last his true identity. I suspect you to be my estranged son, Filigrew.
Filigrew, Father? No, he's either Garfield the cobbler, Elizabeth's disfigured cousin Francis, her crooked half-brother Henry, or Mortlake, the woodcutter stroke ploughman stroke haymaker. Or... he's you, isn't he, Elizabeth?
Me, milady? But I'm standing here and he's over there.
Don't try and wriggle out of it.
Remove your mask, Sarah.
Very well. And I shall have the last laugh, my friends. For I am none other than...
Good gracious, it's a duck.
But that's quite unexpected, isn't it? Do you know this duck, Father?
No, unless...
What?
No, sorry, I'm thinking of another duck. We'll take this duck away and have it for dinner tomorrow. Come on, you pesky varlet, terrorizing the county, donning a mask and robbing stagecoaches in deep.
Oh, no, Father, leave him, even though he's a duck. I love him.
Oh, all right, but if you can't be good, be careful.
Come, my feathered master, tame me with your lash and I will do your bidding.
Next week, another historical romance, The Blindfolded Bush Baby of Old Bedford, by Table France, author of Laugh, I Nearly Designed Some Shoes for a Tapeworm. The Story of Evolution, Part 2.
Some weeks on from the dawn of creation, and life now has a body, that of a small, ugly fish, Piscus Minutus Revoltum, or, as he was known to his fellows, one day, bored with darting about in his primordial lagoon, wondering what he is, our scaly chum swims to the surface and looks around. An idea springs to his tiny brain. Fish, having leapt from the water, flies through the air, lands damply on an outlying rock, and becomes the first ever land animal. Unfortunately, having no lungs, legs, or talent for anything except just lying there, flapping about stupidly and gasping for water, he dies. Marvellous.
Visit Arthur Wainwright's World Museum, the largest museum in the world. Wainwright's World Museum contains everything in the world, because it is the world. To visit the World Museum, send 5 shillings to me, Arthur Wainwright, then walk around for a bit anywhere you like, among the vast galleries, exhibition halls and open-air displays that is the World Museum. Wainwright's World Museum. You may live in it, but I'm going to try and charge you anyway. Box 8.
Learn to fly. With my foolproof method, I guarantee that within one lesson, you will be up in the sky, soaring, banking, diving, and performing complex airborne acrobatics to the amazement of one and all. Apply to Nest 4, 3rd Oak Tree from the end of the golf course, Wantage, Oxfordshire. Only birds, bats, winged insects, flying fish and other animals with wings, or at least some kind of membrane especially designed for a limited form of flight, need apply.
The Story of Evolution, Part 3.
Next in our tale come the dinosaurs, or terrible lizards, so named because they were so terrible at everything, especially not becoming extinct during the late Cretaceous period. But why did this happen? The vast Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton. Hard today to imagine such a creature roaming the earth, but roam it did, along with many other gargantuan skeletons. Huge, ludicrous, bony beasts, devoid of flesh, brains, eyes, ears, stomach, or even a little canvas bag in which to carry their vital organs around. One day they simply fell to bits. And they died. Splendid.
Harpoon sport and recreational news, including a chat with Bossy Phelps.
Hello, this is the sports column and I'm Theophilus Pickering. Earlier this week I spent a memorable afternoon in Highbury with the Empire's second favourite scrum half, Bossy Phelps. Here is a printed extract of our chat, complete with some photographs. Hello, Bossy.
Hello, Theophilus.
Now, tell me, Bossy, why are you encased in a block of ice up to your neck?
I always begin the day like this. It makes me rugged. There's too much mollycoddling goes on today. I grew up in the trenches of Passchendaele, and even there I felt pampered. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. The Empire was built by men who encased themselves in blocks of ice up to their neck.
Now, you believe the human body is a temple, don't you, Bossy?
Yes, I believe the human body is a temple. Our brain is the altar, our muscles are chapels, our sinews are oak pews, our lungs are prayer mats, our kneecaps are small bony fonts, our heart is a collection plate, and our elbows are those 2 brass hooks in the vestry where the vicar hangs his robes on his day off.
Quite.
Photograph 1. Bossy Phelps being chipped out of his block of ice so he can start his sporting day.
I commence my day with a brisk 30-mile roll to Luton. That turns me up for the main exercise.
Which is?
Rolling back from Luton.
Bossy, you've achieved many sporting feats in your time, haven't you?
Yes.
What's your most memorable?
Skipping through Lapland with Ita Hat.
Nearly there. Photograph 3. Bossy Phelps skipping through Lapland without a hat.
Bossy.
Yes?
You're going to demonstrate a new sport for us now, aren't you?
The word yes escapes my lips with the ease of a released ferret. This is a sport I hope will soon be sweeping the Empire. Like the game of rugby, it is named after the school it was invented in.
And the name of the sport?
Highbury Catholic Grammar for Mixed Infants.
I see.
The rules are simple. 2 teams of 11 face each other across a sandy beach, in the center of which is a large spike. The teams run towards the spike and fling themselves upon it. The first one who reaches the spike wins a mice.
Wilkins wins the mouse! Yay. Wilkins wins the mouse!
Well done, Wilkins.
Photograph 4. 2 teams,
demonstrating the new sport of Highbury Catholic Grammar for mixed infants.
What is the purpose of the sport, Potter?
Well, the words character building spring to mind.
And finally, what is the most important part of any sportsman's life?
Long trousers.
Thank you.
Hey, Pip, your old chum, the editor, back again. Did you know that a large nose is a sign of beauty in Japan? But only if it's attached to somebody's face.
Harpoon Comic Corner.
Here, yeah, ma'am. If a bookworm is a boy who loves books, is a ringworm a boxing enthusiast?
No, it's a parasite that dogs get, you little fool. Go and collect your belongings immediately. It's the poorhouse for you, sonny.
The story of evolution.
So where, oh where, does man come in? Finally, we arrive at the answer. Look at the chain of illustrations below.
Plate 4, the ascent of man, from lowly ape to Homo erectus.
Hmm, rather chilly without clothes, what? Think I'll invent a cummerbund. Hip hip.
Yes, at last, man himself rose above other beasts by superior intelligence, organization, cummerbunds, and, most impressive, cave paintings, probably first formally shown at Stonehenge on Salisbury Plain, now believed to be the first ever art gallery.
Plate 5. Stonehenge, 2 million years BC.
One rather hopes it doesn't rain. All of Thog's paintings will wash away and this lot will just look like a stupid circle of rocks.
And there you have it. Join me next week when I'll be looking at the evolution of the wasp and how to flush a King Charles puppy down the lavatory pan.
Harpoon Romance, in search of the missing trouser leg of the lost city of Kabuli, below the hidden valley of Basora, not far from the faintly concealed hills of Pumiata and the blindingly visible gorge of Quanto Quanto.
By Harry Hill, author of Where Was That Again?
Part the second. I still want that trouser leg, so let's continue our long, dangerous, hot journey. The story so far. Intrepid explorer Professor Blizzard and his friends have journeyed to Africa in search of the missing portion of a sacred pair of trousers. Should the complete pantaloons not be restored to the high priest of the Kukumai tribe, then the British Empire would collapse for some strange, dramatic sort of occult reason. In last week's episode, our heroes crashed their plane and then were attacked by a weird, ragged man with a long white beard whom Ariadne claimed was a long-lost father. Is it really her father, or is she merely trying to get some attention after having only 6 things to say throughout the entire episode? Read on!
Ariadne, is this wild man really your father, or are you merely trying to get some attention?
I'm just trying to get some attention. Sorry.
Tie him up, Bickwell. We'll question him later.
Ready, old man. Later, as the sun sank over the Zira trees, like some huge orange that had somehow got up into the sky, we questioned our strange, tousled visitor, while Withers the retainer made the best of our meager supplies by rustling up a 3-course banquet. Over port and cigars, Mad Jack, as we had begun to call him, although his name was, in fact, Jim Smith, explained his presence in what can only be described as the jungle.
Well, gentlemen, it's like this. 30 years ago, I found this map in a junk shop in St. Ives, Cornwall. Yeah. In my heart, I believed it to be a treasure map.
But why?
Why does glass break when you smash it, madam?
I see. Go on.
Well, here I am 30 years later with a beard.
See here, Bickwell, yeah. There are 7 points marked on the map.
Oh, yes.
If one joins them all up, look what shape it makes.
Good God! It's a bit like Charlie Chaplin's face, isn't it, Oliver?
Charlie Chaplin's face? It's a pair of trousers, man.
My word! Do you suppose this map's got something to do with the missing trouser leg, Blizzard?
Rudimentary, but right, Bickwell.
You mean I've been wasting my time for 30 years?
I'm afraid so, old chap. Cool.
There's not a moment to lose. Come, gentlemen, to Kabuli and the missing trouser leg.
4 hours later, we were deep in the heart of Kabuli territory, a seething, fecund place full of seething, fecund things. Our 20 bearers, led by one Watumbi, chanted as they carried the wreckage of the plane through the jungle on their shoulders. Suddenly...
What's that?
drums, my dear.
Meaning, Blizzard?
Meaning sets of round instruments covered with tortoned animal skin and struck for percussive effect, my dear Bickwell.
Of course. For a moment, I thought... We stared in horror as one by one the bearers fled into the forest, with the exception of Watumbi, who collapsed on the ground and rolled around like some sort of rolling fish that would be interesting if it existed.
What are the drums saying, Watumbi?
Throw away the trousers, master, or the girl gets it.
Blizzard, I think he's trying to say something.
What is it, Watumbi?
Throw away the trousers.
What's that?
The trousers. Throw away the trousers.
He's saying something about the trousers. What is it, Watumbi? You mentioned something about the trousers.
Throw them away.
What them away?
Throw them away.
Didn't quite get it, old chap. Do what to them?
Throw them away.
Get anything, Blizzard?
Nearly. I think he's trying to tell us something about the trousers.
Throw them away.
Throw what away, Watumbi?
The trousers. The trousers. The trousers!
Yes, 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 we've got the trousers, we've got that bit. What we want to know now is, what do we have to do with them?
Throw them away!
Darla, they've lost us. Throw what away?
Throw what away, Watumbi?
Oh, sod it! Quick, they've got Ariadne!
Oh, my God. While we've been messing around with this ignorant native, your fiancé has been kidnapped!
Oh, bother and blast! Will our heroes recover Ariadne? Will they trace her to a huge ivy-covered crumbling city in the heart of the jungle, peopled by natives wearing huge headdresses? Will they tie Ariadne down on a stone altar and try to sacrifice her while she screams and struggles like that girl in King Kong? And will Blizzard and Bickwell burst in their pith helmets and their very, very long shorts just in time to save her and see the whole lost city of Kabuli be destroyed by a volcano? Probably. But find out anyway in next week's enthralling episode of In Search of... Oh, pish, you know the rest.
Who's been polishing the sun, rubbing out the clouds of grey? They must have known just how I like it.
Rip, rip. This is your old chum, back as ever with that jubilant jumble of jollity and japes, the Harpooners Club. First off, spot the ball. Now, this week we've got a slight variation. Yes, you've got to spot the teams. Look below and you'll see a photograph of a football in an empty pitch. So where are the teams? Put 22 crosses where you think the players are. And if you're right, we'll put a smile on your face by sending you a musical paintbrush. Ha! And now for this week's optical illusion. Look at the black and white drawing opposite. If you concentrate on the white, it looks for all the world like an ugly old woman in a big hood.
Hello, my dears.
See? But now, focus only on the black, and presto! Thirty-six can-can dancers. And a frog. Incredible, eh? Last up, reader's letters. Dear editor, I'm writing to tell you how much I enjoy the Harpoon. In fact, I'm contemplating killing my newsagent if he fails to supply it. Incidentally, did you know that a friend of my late father's was the first man to drive a steamroller round the Cape of Good Hope? I've forgotten his name, and unfortunately I never met him. The friend, that is, not my father. Sincerely yours, Susan Smith of Litchfield Staffs. Well, I'm afraid that's all for this week. And don't miss next week's issue, will you? We're giving away a free lamb cutlet in every copy. Well, this is your old chum adjusting his snorkel, fiddling with his hosepipe, swimming to the surface, and saying Imperatus Fantasiarus Blubberum, hip hip. Right, pull me up, Captain Bonnet.
Who's been polishing the sun, rubbing out the clouds of grey? They must have known just how I like it. Oh, oh, come on, let's go.
The Harpoon is printed and published weekly by the proprietors, London W1. The magazine was penned by Julian Dutton and Peter Bainham. The characters were lavishly depicted by Susie Brann, Alistair McGowan, Mary Elliott Nelson, Peter Bainham and Julian Dutton. The Harpoon was produced on stretched goat's vellum by Sarah Smith. All rights reserved.
Everything's coming my way. Who's been polishing the sun? They must have known just how I like it. Everything's coming my way.